time for prudence, not panic. Science, not stigma. Facts, not fear.
The National Coronavirus Command Council has decided to enforce a nationwide lockdown for 21 days.
At this moment of national emergency, to stay at home, protect our NHS, and save lives.
And save lives.
And save lives.
And save lives.
The coronavirus is having a profound effect on the established structures of our globe. International travel has been suspended, borders have been closed, entire countries are in lockdown to prevent further spread, and health systems are being stretched to their limits. You're listening to The Impact, Coronavirus and Organised Crime from the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organised Crime. I'm Jack Meegan-Vickers. For the next 12 weeks, this special edition weekly podcast will look at how the ongoing coronavirus is impacting on organised crime around the world, and how the illicit economy may affect our ability to respond to the virus. I'll be drawing on global initiative experts based around the world to look at regional changes and impacts, but then also drawing on specific areas such as counterfeits and cybercrime. This week, we'll try to speak to as many of our team as we can so that we can bring you a global perspective of this crisis. Joining me now is Mark Shaw, Director of the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organised Crime. Mark, you've been studying organised crime for many years. What do you think the impact of the coronavirus is on organised crime?
Understanding the impact of the COVID-19 virus on organised crime is really a little bit like all developments in relation to the virus at the moment, a bit of a moving target. What we do know, I think, from our perspective, from our network, from the information we are getting, is firstly that organized crime in some places has indeed been disrupted by the virus, as has ordinary business, and that's to be expected. So criminal groups or illicit markets more generally have been affected by the virus and have slowed down. That does not mean that there's not new thinking within groups about how to continue the business. And I think one key component of this is that there are certain parts of organized crime or illicit markets who see some advantage in the disruption. And a very good example of that is colleagues working in West Africa, say in Guinea-Bissau or elsewhere, this idea that the shutdown provides openings and opportunities to operate when people are distracted by a major global crisis. Secondly, what we do know through multiple reports, and some of them have been in the media, is that there are new opportunities for organized crime. And, you know, at the most basic level, that's counterfeit hand sanitizer, for example. At more sophisticated level, there are multiple cyber scams underway now linked to the virus. And that's partly because more and more people are online, either for their own work or watching the news. So it's this constant phase of adaptation. And as in the legitimate business world, some criminal organizations or illicit markets will have advantages and some will have disadvantages. I think we see it as our job to try and track that, because the crisis will stretch for some time, as we know. It will give rise to new markets and strengthen and weaken other markets, as I've said. But on the other side of the crisis, I suspect organized crime or part of organized crime will look a little bit different. And so understanding these changes now will be particularly important.
So, Mark, how will the closing of borders affect illicit trade?
I think initially it will slow it, partly because systems had been established in places where people understood how things worked, and whether that's simply the corruption of an official or the use of a particular route, etc., those were established practices. So there is bound to be some kind of disruption. And there's also some unintended or unseen consequences, some of which we may not know. You know, some things have been reported to us around fear of criminal groups selling drugs at the front end because of worries about getting the virus. I think higher borders or stricter borders in the longer term, because the the profit margins for moving goods in particular, of course that's not the only thing criminal groups are doing, will rise, will mean to some degree, as has been the case in the migrant smuggling market, more criminal organizations. So to get around borders, if there's still a demand for those products, will mean that criminal groups will strengthen their ability to do that. And of course, they will want to make money in doing so. Some of that may be some time off, because everything's really in a process of dynamism now, a process of movement. But I have no doubt that that will be the result in the longer term.
So this is, of course, as we all know, this is a global crisis. What has the response of the GI been to this?
I think we've adapted in a number of ways by trying to increase our own conceptual understanding. You know, can we order different categories of change? Some of that will come out in a new policy brief that tries to categorize that and look at the implications. And we are also going to produce a weekly summary of news stories and a little bit of analysis of our own around the impact of organized crime on the virus and vice versa. And then, as you yourself are doing, to put together a debate between staff and understanding between staff about what is going on. Now, we think that, of course, this will have a degree of longer term impact, as I said earlier. So it's not only us trying to understand the disruption in the short term, but to understand that some of the short-term disruptions over the weeks and months that are coming may shape the evolving nature of organized crime in many places itself. So for us, it's part of the ongoing attempt to monitor, to report, to respond to organized crime at all levels, drawing on our networks.
Thank you very much, Mark, and I'm sure we'll be hearing from you again very soon. You can follow Mark on Twitter at @Mark_Shaw_, where you can hear all about the latest news from the GI. There have been cases of coronavirus, or COVID-19, reported in at least 170 countries at the time of recording, with more than 24,000 deaths. One of those affected is Mexico, a place notorious for drug trafficking and counterfeit medicines. So what impact is the coronavirus having on the country and the wider region of Latin America?
My name is Siria Gastelum Felix, and I am the director of the Resilience Fund. We can already see the impact of coronavirus on the organized crime dynamics in Mexico. It is expected that as the border between Mexico and the U.S. is closed, this is going to have an impact on the flow of drugs and other illicit goods. As it has already been reported, there has been also an impact on the price of methamphetamine. The precursors that organized crime groups use to produce methamphetamine usually come from China. And since the trade with China, the pharmaceutical trade for illicit purposes has already been disrupted, it has already been disrupted for illicit products. So today, Keegan Hamilton, one of the journalists that has been covering the Sinaloa cartel and the production of methamphetamine, published a story that according to his sources, the big bosses of the Sinaloa cartel order his associates to increase the price of meth. And it was a WhatsApp message that everybody got, and they were ordered to increase the price 6 times. And that this message also came with a threat. So we will probably see a reduction in the production of methamphetamine and a considerable increase in the price to the public. In terms of Mexico, there's also some possible consequences, because it was also reported a few days ago on the huge impact that some cartels like the Cartel Jalisco Nueva Generación, one of the biggest criminal organizations and the most extended ones, they have a great power over the production of counterfeit medicine. They produce medicine for the treatment of cancer, AIDS, drugs for all sorts of ailments. And it's expected that this pandemic is going to put a great pressure on the weak public health system in Mexico. So we can probably foresee that a lot of people are going to be using counterfeit medicine that can affect, you know, their health, but also that can give more sources of funding to criminal organizations. According to some official data, In Mexico, probably 6 out of 10 medical products could be counterfeit. So this obviously represents a big health risk for people who use them. In the same way that we're seeing in Mexico, organized crime stepping up to provide the population with cheap medicine. In Brazil, for example, we have seen organized crime stepping up in taking measures to protect the population from the virus. In the favelas, it was the gangs that announced or demanded self-isolation measures from the population, again with threats. But this is a contrast with the weak response that the governments have shown there. And it's interesting to see how these groups that obviously have a big influence on the populations in the favelas are taking their own measures to protect the population against the virus. There's other effects that are also concerning, because as governments implement measures, this also has an impact on the rights of on civil rights of people. For example, in Honduras, freedom of the press is at stake now that with the new measures announced to protect the populations against the virus, which, you know, in countries like this, it is the press that keeps an eye on serious levels of corruption and organized crime. So without this, I think we're going to miss out on the things that are going to be happening there in the short and probably in the long term. For example, in Venezuela, a journalist was already detained with the excuse of, you know, coverage of coronavirus. But if the situation in Latin America was already vulnerable for journalists, this is creating an even more serious situation for press freedom in general. At the same time, also activists are more vulnerable. For example, in Colombia, now that normal security protocols have been disrupted, social leaders are more vulnerable. Colombia already has been having problems of, you know, with assassinations of social leaders. Some of them receive protection from the government. They have to constantly move locations. They travel in armored cars. But since now they cannot move, their enemies know where they are. This is easier for them to locate them. I think in the last few days, 3 were already murdered.
You can follow Siria on Twitter by searching for @SiriaGastelum. Next, we cross the Atlantic Ocean and turn to the smuggling routes of North Africa.
So my name is Mark McAleff. I'm Senior Fellow with the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime, and I lead a research program in North Africa and the Sahel, where the Global Initiative carries out regular week-on-week monitoring of organized criminal activity and trafficking and smuggling, with a particular focus on irregular migration and human smuggling and human trafficking. The situation in North Africa so far with regards to the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on human smuggling and trafficking, the reality is still a bit early to make a proper assessment of the situation. But I would say on the basis of what we're seeing right now, we're seeing a slowdown, essentially. Human smuggling and trafficking activities are being impacted much like any other economic activity. We're seeing, obviously, tightening of the borders or official decisions being taken to shut down borders across North Africa and also across the Sahel, maybe a bit later in the Sahel. Libya, for instance, which currently doesn't have a single case, a single recorded case of COVID, still took the precaution of shutting down the airport, shutting down ports, and implementing some of the same measures we've seen in other parts of the world. And obviously the Libyan government is doing this in the realization that the Libyan health service in a country which is currently in the middle of a conflict has no capacity to deal with an epidemic. And therefore they're being even more strict in this regard, in spite of them being in an actual conflict. But what we've seen at the border is communities also carrying on this attitude. In the deep south border between Libya and Algeria, we've seen the shutting down of the official border, which is a lifeline essentially for communities in these sparsely populated areas. And the initiative came from the community. The people shutting the border have family and business ties on the other side of the border and on the Algerian side, and they've taken this precaution. The attitude of communities to something like human smuggling is also being felt in this regard. So militias, border forces are all on the alert for any potential smuggling, and this will bring about a slowdown in activity. But that's the short-term outlook. The medium-term outlook is perhaps something that will take a little bit more time to understand, and that will very much be connected to the economic impact that the COVID crisis will have on this region, as it is going to have on the rest of the world. Just today, the Algerian government announced that it was going to cut its budget by 30%. That's a country whose economy and employment depend significantly on government spending. This will have a profound impact on the lives of many Algerians who, for the past couple of years, we had seen an increase in the number of Algerians crossing the boats and taking a chance to reach Europe in this way. We expect that this impact will also affect that, and we expect to see similar shifts across this region.
You can follow Mark on Twitter at MMIC78. From North Africa to Kenya, where stories of fake sanitizer and fake testing kits have been making the news.
My name is Joyce Kimani. I'm the East and Horn of Africa coordinator for the Global Initiative. I focus on the 13 East and Horn of Africa countries. I'm based in Nairobi, Kenya. The most interesting has been how unscrupulous businessmen are taking advantage of this pandemic. And we've seen an increase in fake sanitizers coming up. Only recently, we had the Kenya Bureau of Standards ban 8 sanitizers, which people thought were actually the original ones. But it turns out they were fake. We've also seen things like people branding glycerin, the normal glycerin that people apply on their bodies, which is very popular in Kenya. So people are changing the stickers from glycerin and they're putting it into hand sanitizers and selling it at ridiculous amount. One of the other things that we've seen is we had a case where there was a sale of fake testing kits. When they were raided at the premises, it turned out that there was no such a thing. They didn't have such a kit, but they were using it as an opportunity to make money. Our regional governments are also trying to look more into the kind of goods that are being sold, especially transnationally. For example, with the imports and exports of fake sanitizers, we've seen some regions trying to export fake sanitizers, and hence the multi-agency team, which was set up by the governments to look at goods passing through the borders, have been very busy looking into the kind of maybe glycerin and masks and other gloves and hand sanitizers that are being passed across the border. So it's been quite busy for Kenyan community.
Thank you to Joyce, who will be tracking East and the Horn of Africa over the next few months. The origin of this form of coronavirus is not fully known. What we do know is that the first reported cases were in the Chinese city of Wuhan, but it appears that it started in a seafood market in Wuhan, where wild animals like marmots, bats, snakes, and birds are traded illegally. The illegal wildlife trade is worth billions of dollars each year, and our man at the Global Initiative tracking this is Julian Radomir, who joins with me now. Julian, what impact has the coronavirus had on wildlife trafficking in East and Southern Africa?
I think the impact of COVID-19 on trafficking and wildlife in East and Southern Africa is something that we are going to be watching very closely for the foreseeable future. At this stage, it's probably too early to tell how much of an impact, if any, it's had. Certainly, I would suspect that there would be some slowdown, you know, as traditional transport routes are shut down, as countries close their borders. That in itself is going to have a knock-on effect on the illegal wildlife trade and movements of large quantities of ivory or rhino horn or pangolin scales. But the longer term impact and the real impact remains a largely unknown quantity at this stage. So too does the impact of China's ban on the consumption of wildlife products. And it's important to note that the ban in China does not cover wildlife products that are used for their medicinal properties or used in carvings or bracelets or as luxury goods.
So what are your thoughts about the reports that we're hearing that illegal wildlife traders are claiming that rhino horn is in fact a cure for coronavirus?
I think reported claims that rhino horn dealers have been telling people that the horn can cure COVID-19 is an extension of existing trends that have existed in the illicit rhino horn trade for some time. You know, over the years, we've seen rhino horn evolve initially from being touted as a cancer cure and something that was rooted in an urban myth that began doing the rounds in Vietnam in around 2008, 2009, that a senior party official or a senior general in the army had been cured of cancer by drinking a mixture of rhino horn and rice wine. You know, those were the early stages, and over time it's morphed as these networks have sought out new markets, new ways of selling and marketing the product. So you will find rhino horn being sold for its varied medicinal properties, and also, you know, increasingly as a luxury goods item, so being sold as a status symbol and bought by people who are looking for carvings and bracelets and bangles or something that they can mount on a wall or put on display in their homes to show off their status. So efforts to sell rhino horn as some kind of cure-all for COVID-19 are not particularly surprising. Also, interestingly enough, the historic roots of use of rhino horn, you know, in traditional Chinese medicine, rhino horn has been used as a fever reducer. And that's led by extension to some of the networks trading in it today, trying to sell it as a cure for cancer or a cure for something like COVID-19.
There are reports that blame the illegal wildlife trade for the emergence of the coronavirus. Could the wildlife trade as we know it be at risk due to this?
I think that the spread of COVID-19 is going to put significant pressure on consumer countries like China. I think that there's very real concern that this is something that could happen again, and this, you know, it's something that's been predicted for a very long time, and that the next zoonotic disease that we see jump from animals to humans could be far, far worse. And the illegal wildlife trade, wildlife markets, trade in wildlife tends to encourage developments of these types of diseases and exchanges of pathogens between wildlife and humans. So it's an extreme risk, and I think that it's something that wildlife activists and organizations are going to use to their advantage going forward in trying to put pressure on China, trying to get China to put more stringent mechanisms in place. In the past, we've seen China impose wildlife trade bans before, you know, most recently with the SARS outbreak there. That ban was eventually lifted. It remains to be seen how long the current ban will remain in place on trade in wildlife products or consumption of wildlife products, and whether that ban will be extended to include things like medicinal use of wildlife or the sale of wildlife for other types of uses.
Julian, you also study organized crime in East and Southern Africa. What are you going to be watching out for over the next few weeks and months?
Well, I think for criminal networks, COVID-19 offers an opportunity, one that can be exploited quite cynically. It also can have quite a detrimental impact on their operations, because as it brings economies across Africa juddering to a halt, it's going to have an impact on supply routes and on smuggling routes, just as it has an impact on normal businesses trying to move their products and export products. So I think one of the things that we'll, or a few of the things that we'll be monitoring over the coming weeks and months is the impact. You know, will there be a decrease in poaching, for instance, and trafficking in wildlife products? What will the impact be on gangs and gang violence in places like South Africa's Western Cape province? Will we be seeing shifts or price increases in the drugs trade? Will there be interruptions, for instance, in the supply of precursor chemicals to countries where methamphetamine is produced? And what about the impact on human smuggling, trafficking, or illicit gold mining? So I think they're fairly far-reaching consequences. One area that is of particular concern is the proliferation of counterfeit medicines. And it's a health crisis in many ways in Africa. Most recently, Interpol carried out an operation globally, or coordinated an operation with local police forces globally, arresting 121 suspects in 90 countries for selling counterfeit products linked to COVID-19. Those included 34,000 fake surgical masks, substandard hand sanitizer, and unauthorized antiviral medication. And we've seen large quantities of fake medicines in Africa. Of the fake medicines, counterfeit medicines that were seized between 2013 and 2017, 42% were in sub-Saharan Africa, according to the World Health Organization. And that figure could be significantly higher due to underreporting. And there are very real-world consequences for this. You know, the estimates that have been published in the past that up to as many as 122,000 children under the age of five were dying every year in Africa because of substandard anti-malarial medication. Now, can you imagine the impact from all kinds of bogus cures and treatments being sold for something as terrifying as COVID-19?
Thank you very much, Julian. We'll certainly keep tracking this as we learn more information over the coming weeks. You can follow Julian on Twitter at Julian Radomir.
There is plenty more to come in the show, so do stay with us. I'd just like to take this moment to say that the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime are across social media. Just search for the Global Initiative and you'll find us. You can also visit our website, which is www.globalinitiative.net, where you can find in-depth reports and analysis on subjects as far-ranging as drug trafficking and human smuggling to illegal gold mining and the illegal arms trade. But in the meantime, let's get back to the show.
You're listening to The Impact, Coronavirus and Organised Crime from the Global Initiative with me, Jack Meegan-Vickers. So far, we've explored the impact of the coronavirus on organised crime in Latin America, East Africa, North Africa, South Africa, and on the illegal wildlife trade. But let's keep things moving. We're heading into Europe and into the Balkans, a key smuggling route, but with many borders in Europe now closed, what effect is this having on organised crime in the region?
My name is Fatjona Medini, and I'm the Western Balkan Coordinator for the Global Initiative, and I'm based in Tirana, Albania. As a result of coronavirus, many of the governments in the Balkans have now imposed curfews and limited the circulation of cars and people in the streets. Police and even armies are strongly monitoring lockdowns, and as a result, less crimes like burglaries and shopliftings are happening. Also, there's a strong decrease of murders throughout the region. For a criminal, it's not easy to do a crime of this nature and escape police, while towns and cities, for the most part of the day and night, are empty. As a result of lockdowns and border closing, we are seeing less smuggling of migrants throughout the region. Balkan route is an important one when it comes to migrants from North Africa and Middle East who try to reach Western Europe. Now it's not easy for the Balkan smugglers to help them crossing the borders. However, though borders are closed for passengers, the import and exports of goods is still going on. Cargos are arriving to Balkan ports and border crossing points in order to secure food, and this leaves room for trafficking, especially for commodities like drugs and cigarettes. But it's important to emphasize that based on our previous analysis, an important part of smuggling in the region is happening through illegal borders, both land and maritime. Right now, police of all countries is focusing in monitoring lockdowns and new challenges that the coronavirus is bringing. So we are expecting an increase of smuggling through illegal borders. We might have, for example, more cannabis smuggled with speedboats from Albania to Italy, especially given the difficult situation that this country is facing and the possible destruction of Italian security forces. On the other hand, in areas like North Kosovo, smuggling of goods and illegal substances might see a rise. Other areas like the illegal border between Montenegro and Bosnia in so-called Trebinje region might also see more smuggling.
That was Fatjona discussing the Balkans, and you can follow Fatjona on Twitter at Fatjona Medini. Now we're heading over the well-travelled Adriatic Sea into the epicentre of the coronavirus outbreak in Europe, Italy. As of recording, Italy has the most cases outside of China, but has surpassed China in the number of reported deaths, with nearly 8,000. The country's health system has struggled during this crisis, and it's a system that has been infiltrated by organized crime.
I'm Ruggero, Scaturo is my second name, and I joined the GI, I would say, family in November 19 as an associate, and I'm based in the Vienna office. I would say the only positive thing about isolation is that you can take a lot of time for yourself and think about what's important in life. And for me, as a Sicilian and as an Italian, of course, for me, it's family. And I have to say, I'm very happy and I feel actually good that back home in Sicily, my family is good and very isolated. But then you start realizing how such a beautiful word, which for me is family, has been over the years acquiring such a negative connotation. When it comes to organized crime, family is equivalent to clan, to faction. So in general terms, it's a group of criminals united by all kind of things but love, which actually in a normal family is the only one that, that ties its members. So when it comes to organized crime, is for me at least, it's not speculation to say that the health system in certain region of Italy has no enough resources to deal with this crisis. And honestly, I don't know what would have happened if the epicenter of the COVID wasn't Lombardy, but was either Sicily or Calabria or Campania or Apulia, you know, these southern regions. It is because of families, but the bad ones, so the Cosa Nostra families, for as far as Sicily is concerned, then it's 'Ndrangheta in Calabria, Camorra in Naples, and Sacra Coronita in Puglia and some others in the southern region of Italy. These families, over the years, have been diverting healthcare funds, but for real, for years. I don't know how many families have the monopoly now of the so-called ambulances business, or how many families have been progressively contributed to our situation in which the hospitals, the clinics, have to close departments or entire wings because the last maintenance was, I don't know, in 1982, or because there is only one doctor for a whole structure. I mean, I don't want to say that it is the case in every structure, in every hospital of the south of Italy, but finding a public hospital perfectly functioning and ready to cope with such a crisis in the south of Italy, for me, not only as a researcher in organized crime, but for the general, like a normal person in the south of Italy, would absolutely say that it's becoming a luxury to find a perfectly functioning structure. For years, the state has been absent. For years, the state hasn't provided any sort of basic need, especially when it comes to the right to health, for example. They don't even know how to cope with an emergency because an ambulance, for example, a heart attack, because in the ambulance there's no equipment. And now all of a sudden you feel like you can tell me what to do. I mean, this is it's a very complicated perception that Southern especially, but in general, Italians have years and years of organized crime freely operated in sectors such as the healthcare has definitely contributed to some sort of impossibility to be ready to such a crisis, and B, the perception that people have and trusted have in the healthcare system in Italy and especially in the south.
Thank you to Ruggero, one of the Global Initiative analysts based in Vienna. We have seen massive economic stimulus packages from governments across the world in an attempt to fend off the worst impact of the coronavirus on economies. But what happens to illicit financial flows and money laundering in a time of such uncertainty?
I'm Marcina Hunter, and I'm a senior analyst at the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. When looking at illicit financial flows and the implications of COVID-19, I think it's good to look at whether the financial flow requires the actual physical moving of a commodity or not. And when we make that differentiation, we can start to think about what the implications will be. And for that, we can look at gold, money value transfer systems, and other forms of money laundering, such as trade-based money laundering and cash smuggling. So starting with gold, I think we can take some lessons from the Ebola crisis in Africa and also see that people do tend to invest in gold in times of uncertainty. And so while we've seen a huge amount of volatility in the gold price in the last month, I do expect it to increase quite a bit in the coming months, which will make gold an attractive commodity both for criminals looking to profit from the gold trade as well as money launderers looking for a way to launder the money if you can move the gold, of course. I think this is also going to have big implications for the labor force in Africa, as well as Latin America and Asia, probably, where you see a lot of artisanal and small-scale gold mining. Looking at the Ebola crisis, for example, in Liberia, a very significant amount of people lost their jobs in the service sector. And so the gold sector provided an economic safety net, which, because it's easy to enter and there's a real lack of regulations. And so I think we may see a lot of people turning to gold mining in a lot of parts of the world as the service sector does shut down. However, with international flights stopped, especially to international gold hubs like Dubai, it will be very difficult to move gold, which will decrease demand and prices will likely drop. And this is going to create a really golden opportunity for criminal actors, if you will, to buy large amounts of gold at discount prices and hold on to it for when the markets reopen and potentially really take advantage of those increased prices that we expect to see. And so I think gold will become increasingly attractive to criminal actors as the coronavirus plays out. Looking at those other types of illicit financial flows and money laundering, trade-based money laundering and cash smuggling does require movement of goods. And so I think these will be impacted with restrictions on movement. However, depending on how long the crisis lasts, I don't know if there will be any long-term ramifications or a decrease in this type of money laundering. Lastly, looking at money value transfer systems, such as Hawala, and mobile transfer systems, I think these will be increasingly used. Hawala is a type of Islamic banking system which has been around for centuries. And for example, it was used in Iran to circumvent sanctions, and it was used in Syria during the conflict when movement and banking services were restricted. And so while banking might not be restricted, movement certainly will be. And so these types of money and value transfer systems where you can move large amounts of money, largely unregulated, without having to move goods, will be really attractive, not just to the general population, but for criminal actors looking to move finances and launder money. So those are some of, I think, the implications we might see for illicit financial flows and money laundering come out of the COVID-19 crisis.
Around the world, governments are forcing citizens to stay at home and work from there if possible, which means more people are online and targets for cyber criminals. The National Crime Agency in the UK have warned that organised crime groups may try to exploit the coronavirus outbreak. So what have we seen so far?
My name is Prem Mahadevan. I am a senior analyst with the Global Initiative Against Transnational Organized Crime. I focus on the socio-political dimension of cybercrime, and my regional specialization is South and Southeast Asia. There have been two particular aspects about coronavirus which mark it out from previous waves of cybercrime. Usually every year, there is one big wave of cybercrime clustered around or organized around a major event. It could be Brexit, it could be the Olympic Games or the World Cup or the Australian bushfires. And it need not just be one event, but essentially when cyber criminals set out to scam people, they need to use something that will get people to click. They need to use a ruse to get people to click on to a suspect link. In the case of Corona, two factors that set it apart from previous such events are: one, that it concerns health and safety, and that is a very immediate concern for people, especially when it comes to the well-being of their family. And two, now that there's an enforced regime of working from home, persons who might have been more cautious about clicking on suspect links when they're in the office, when they're in a professional environment, could become more complacent when they're sitting at home and yet still under work pressure to meet deadlines and to fill quotas. And this, I think, makes for a perfect storm where there is going to be a rise in cybercrime attempts, an increase in attempts, and a lowering of vigilance. So this sets coronavirus apart. One event which has really focused people's attention has been an attack, a ransomware attack, on the Czech Republic's second biggest hospital in Brno, where computer systems were shut down for a few hours. And this particular hospital was testing and treating coronavirus victims. That has caused great alarm across the European cybersecurity community.
Thank you very much to Prem. And I'd just like to say the online world moves rapidly, and I encourage everyone to be incredibly vigilant right now. Finally, let's speak to Julia Stanyard, an analyst here at the GI who had the difficult job of collating as much information as possible about the impact of coronavirus on transnational organised crime. This information has been written into a policy document which you can find on our website, www.globalinitiative.net. You can also find it in the bio for this episode. Julia, can you share what's in this report?
Yeah, so we've brought together a lot of examples of stories we've seen so far of kind of organised crime's response to the virus and states in changing their policing strategies. So what we've seen so far and what we think will be important themes for the future is that, crucially, some organised crime activity is being curtailed in the same way that everybody's been restricted in travel and reduction in trade and transport of goods. Some things have been curtailed, such as transfers of drugs or precursors for creating different types of drugs, for example. But at the same time, other things have been able to scale up, where organised crime has been able to take advantage of the fact that police forces and kind of policymakers are currently focusing elsewhere, understandably, and might be able to ramp up their activities because they're not being given so much oversight. Also, we've found a lot of emerging stories of exploitation in the health sector. There's been loads of emerging types of online scams to do with selling medical products, counterfeit medical products being smuggled across borders as well. So it seems that criminal groups are often like pivoting towards the crisis as it emerges. And there's also where there has been historically organised crime involvement in health sectors, for example, like mafia control over hospital funding, for example, or kind of counterfeit medical products being provided. We're seeing that as an issue now that those institutions have been weakened, and when they're under stress from the coronavirus outbreak, that more patients are coming in, that's becoming a real problem. There's a lot of online scams, like I mentioned, and also we're seeing that some of the worst impacts on the virus might be to those groups who are associated with criminal markets in some ways. Like, for example, we're seeing migrants who might otherwise rely on smugglers. They're not able to move in the same way that they would want to normally, so they're being stuck in places that they want to leave. People who use drugs also are often people who are outside of health systems generally, and if the impact of the virus might then be felt most harshly to those people who are already vulnerable and marginalised.
Julia, thank you very much for coming on the show. I'm sure we'll speak again very soon. You can follow Julia on Twitter, at Julia Stanyard. You can read the policy document on our website, www.globalinitiative.net. You can also subscribe to our weekly newsletter about the coronavirus and organised crime. Don't forget that you can find the GI on social media as well by searching for the Global Initiative. That's all we've got time for today, but we'll be back next week with an in-depth discussion about how counterfeit medicines and healthcare are affected by the coronavirus. Leave a review, like and share us with your friends. Why not hit that subscribe button as soon as you're here? I'm Jack Megan Vickers. Remember to wash your hands, and for those in lockdown, stay home and stay safe.